Welcome to the Heritage Chart Show Show. I'm music writer, author and almost pop swot, Sian Pattenden.
And I'm music writer, author and has-been pop swot, Pete Perfides. Welcome to the second episode of the Heritage Chart Show Show. If you heard the first one, you might even be less clear about what the Heritage Chart is before. Nevertheless, we will try and explain.
It's a chart show broadcast every Sunday night on Talking Pictures. It's invented by legendary broadcaster Mike Reed for pop fans, apparently over the age of 35, who, to use Mike's words, maintain a lingering affection for Top of the Pops, Pan's People and all the Radio 1 DJs on a Sunday evening between 5 and 7pm. And the Heritage Chart Show show, our podcast, is...
It's an outlet for our lifelong passion for chart rundowns and our keenness to live in a world where they're still relevant. Plus, it's an outlet for our never-ending fascination with Mike Reed's Heritage Chart. Do we know how it's put together?
No.
Do we know what qualifies you for inclusion in the Heritage Chart? No. Although it seems to help if you're Don Powell from Slade.
Indeed. If you want actual info, you can go to heritagechart.co.uk to find out more, which is the official chart website. So thanks to you, the listeners of our inaugural episode with Lawrence. We have a listener, Darren Riley. He says, I love your Heritage Chart Show Show podcast. I had to put that bit in there. I thought I could edit that out, but I thought, yeah, let's put that. He says, so we were talking about Paul Young's band last time, regarding Los Pacaminos, Darren knows. He says, their name is a pun on pack 'em in. I know this, says Darren, because I was also in a pretend Tex-Mex band and they were our only source of fake rivalry. Thank you, Darren. He also concurs that Rockefeller TV owned billboards. So honestly, we don't want to know any more about that bit because that's a mystery that I don't want to solve.
Yeah. Thank you also to listener Mike Smith, formerly EMI music publisher to the stars, one of the most successful music humans ever.
Yeah, really, I is, isn't he?
And here he is listening to our podcast. He liked one of the jokes, Jammy Little Fingers. Plus, the Gino De Campo fact went down quite well. Those of you who don't know, Gino De Campo burgled Paul Young.
Very, very long time ago. It wasn't recently. And yes, legal fans, he was done for it. And he has paid his time. He's apologised. Plus, ex-Cocteau twin, this mortal Coil, and indie Svengali, Simon Raymond, commented brilliant on Twitter, or what used to be Twitter. Isn't that amazing? I mean, come on. We could just stop here.
We've surpassed all our goals. We have no more goals.
Totally. Well, that's us bragging. You could have skipped that bit or just forget that ever happened. If you do like the show, though, you can buy us a coffee, which does help with our production costs. It's buymeacoffee.com/Pete and Sian, all one word. And that just sort of helps with the cost of the jokes. But let's stop frothing about all that. Let's pick an episode and also meet our guest.
Today's show is number 107. That's Heritage Chart Show number 107, March 2024, helping us to pick out items of interest, things that excite us and those that confuse us, is DJ presenter, industry legend and Mr. Guilty Pleasures himself, Sean Rowley.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me. This is an absolute honour to be here.
Lovely to have you.
I feel like I've entered into a strange parallel universe that only a few people know about.
But so far,
it's got slightly weird David Lynchian sort of vibes going on.
I imagine your life anyway is very sort of Heritage Chart adjacent with the Heritage Chart Show and Guilty Pleasures.
In so much that one could, I suppose, imply that watching the Heritage Chart Show is a guilty pleasure within itself because we know it's wrong, but we like it.
We love it.
We love it. So, therefore, it qualifies into that world, that universe, I suppose.
And favourite acts that have appeared on the show so far?
Oh, cool. I mean, immediately I'm going to spout forth my sort of concept of when this show works for me personally. This is my experience, my journey when I enter into the world of the Heritage Chart. When it works for me, it's when it's just bizarre. I mean, when it first came into my orbit was you had mentioned it to me, Pete, back in the summer, I believe. And I went off and had a look and I saw what is probably one of the highlights of the Heritage Chart Show, which was Lee John performing his new single in front of a Zoom backdrop, which I felt, this is the show for me in that moment there. That summed up everything. I'm less keen on the polished performances.
Right.
I like the DIY stuff. The DIY stuff really touches me.
It portends where we're all heading, doesn't it?
And where we've all come from, in a funny sort of way.
Indeed. There's so much mystery in which the show is shrouded. What do you think, Sean, makes a heritage artist?
Can I start by telling you what doesn't make a heritage artist? This relates to a quote that I heard from Paul Weller. Now, there's a podcast that exists out there called Looking for Paul Weller that I think you...
Desperately Seeking Paul.
Which you were a guest on, Pete, which was a brilliant podcast concept whereby this fan of Paul Weller and broadcaster spent 180 episodes interviewing people who had worked in and had connections within the orbit of Paul Weller. And on the final one, he got the interview with Paul Weller. And it's really lovely, and he's sitting down and he's chatting away and everything. And then there's a moment where the atmosphere turns, where it's just hinted at the fact that Paul Weller might be a heritage act. And he proclaims fully, I am not a fucking heritage act. And I think that to me sums up, that's not a heritage act. And I get it. Well, it's someone who really, really isn't comfortable with their past. I think a good heritage act, and they're featured in this show, probably one of the best heritage acts, it's probably Madness, because they just do it so well. They embrace their past, and yet they're still making tunes that are really great records that, as a fan of that band, you will want to listen to. But there's no way on earth that they're turning their back on their past. They love their past. Yeah. In fact, they're really milking their past. So that's a great heritage act. So you could run through all those slightly older ones. You could go Neil Young, not heritage. Paul McCartney, heritage. Embraces his past, willing to celebrate it. It's people, it's acts that are willing to celebrate their past.
Yeah, and Bruce Foxton. That's the line. That's the line between Weller and Foxton right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Foxton is a Heritage Chart Show regular.
Yeah, quite rightly so.
He certainly is. Should we get on with the episode 107, if you want to watch it in parallel, viewers, if you want to do this. I don't know whether that works. Mike Reed does his usual stuff, but he starts with a quote. It's from one of the heritage artists, unnamed. So this adds intrigue at the top of the show, and I really like that. One of them has said, there's nothing like it on TV. And obviously there isn't. Small pause from Mike. Which is good.
And it just brilliantly teases you for the rest of the show to try and work out who it is. It does reveal that. Did you pick up on who it was?
No.
Oh, no, I've completely.
There's an Easter egg in there. Oh, my goodness. Should we do it at the end of the show?
It'll be relevant when the clip comes up. I'll inform you of why it came about. I really got into this. I love that idea of just. But this is the genius of Mike. Mike is a brilliant, brilliant broadcaster.
Tell us why.
Because he's got you in that first line. Someone said to me, and he's captured you, and he's pulled you into the show, and you're now invested, and you're not going to give up until you find out who was that pop legend.
Says Inspector Rowley.
He sounded very pugnacious when he said it. Very combative, uncharacteristically so for Mike, I thought.
This is wonderful. So it opens a narrative. This is a story. We're on a journey
We're going in. We're investing.
So the first act we see is number 40, Rod Stewart, Jules Holland. They're doing Almost Like Being in Love from Brigadoon, heritage fans. And they're filming at St Pancras Station.
This everything about this clip is fucking joyous. It's just brilliant, isn't it? You got the playing out. So, because obviously you've got Rod and you've got Jules who have come together through their love of train sets. This is the combination. You know, they've both got these incredible train sets that they obviously go around each other's houses and look at their train sets.
It's too lovely.
It's amazing. And then you've got, for me, well, as I watch Rod's performance, I'm a massive Rod fan, massive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those performances in the 70s, I could watch those forever. But this performance on this particular day in this train station is more of a cry of Michael Barrymore's My Kind of People, isn't it? He's surrounded by punters, all with cameras out filming, obviously, who can't believe they've watched. They've gone to get the train and there's Rod and Jules singing out.
Yeah, it's interesting when you see clips like this now, is that the whoever's directing them, they make a point of having cutaway shots to people holding up their phones, because that's the signalling to tell us.
That's the mark, isn't it?
That's to tell us this is a real one-off event. Look at all these people holding up their phones.
Yeah, this is important.
Yeah.
And babies, holding up babies. Did you know that?
Very true. There's a baby being held up.
As I say, classic my kind of people, Barrymore.
It's Catholic Church, isn't it? You know, pick a baby, kiss it on the forehead. We've got an event. So we have these two popes, Rod and Jules. What's interesting is Jules is playing the piano. They don't cut to any of the piano. The piano is mixed so low you can't actually hear it. What's going on there? Do you think that's an ego thing? Rod's going, no, this is my tune.
I did notice a little cutaway that happens at one point, and we see a teleprompter in the corner for Rod's lyrics.
Spotted. I didn't spot that. That's good. Yeah.
That's interesting, because Rod, I don't think he's much of a rehearser, much of a preparer. I know through having read accounts of him recording previous albums that he lets the session musicians kind of get everything in place. And then he'll just turn up on the day and just nail it.
Yeah.
He doesn't lose sleep. I think Rod sleeps very easy at night.
Can we just make reference to the two backing singers and the chemistry, shall we call it that, the chemistry that exists between Rod and the two female backing singers? It's like a sort of, still got it. they smile at him, but they're not really smiling.
They're not smiling with their eyes, are they?
No.
There's a lot of still got it on the Heritage Chart show in general. This is a recurring trope.
And I think at one point, I mean, Sean was talking just ahead of the show, which is always really annoying when you hear that from people, a little bit about the word delusion, which we will come back to, about holding the ego ball, you know, and keeping it in the air. What I liked about this is there's also social commentary. It's not just two rock stars who happen to be playing in your local station. There are people collecting for the Trussell Trust.
Yeah.
And they have deliberately kept that in. And there's something quite sweet about that, and also quite jarring. Rod Stewart is not poor, but they've decided, you know, that really is a man of the people. He knows about this stuff. He knows that people need feeding in this country.
Rod's been on a mission lately, hasn't he? He's been sort of paying for people's operations. And,
has he?
I meant to mention this earlier.
Yeah.
He's been very...
goes out to people who look a bit ill and go, you need sorted out, love. Yeah.
He's been very critical of the government, because I think he's having a bit of repentance, because he initially endorsed Boris Johnson years and years ago, and he's had a total turnaround.
Oh, that's interesting. That is really interesting, because Rod, in my mind, is true blue through and through, isn't he?
I think he's certainly been blue for a number of years, but I don't know if things have got so bad and his conscience has been pricked. I don't know if it's the influence of his wife, Penny Lancaster, who's a police person. It's incredible. His wife's a policewoman. That's mind-blowing. That's just what
wife has policewoman.
Yeah, Rod Stewart's wife is like... Because she used to be a model, didn't she?
She certainly did, yes.
That's...
A model policeman.
That's not surprising. Come on, it's Rod.
No, but that's they're still very much...
The police aren't necessarily known for their left-wing leaning, though, are they, Pete?
But I think some...
Was she in the Met?
I think it goes two ways. Possibly if you're a serving police officer and you see things that change you and make you slightly more empathetic, or you go the other way and just into a monster. So...
The other way. I mean, his recent act of generosity that really was picked up on by a lot of the media, wasn't there a situation where someone's train set got wrecked? Do you remember that? There was this huge model train set that someone had set up, and it got vandalised. That's what happened. So it appeared on... It was that brilliant moment where Rod was on the front of the record collector equivalent of train sets. I'm going down an avenue.
Listeners will tell us
I'm
it's
going
fine.
Down an avenue here. I don't know.
No, you're right. I've just called up the headline. Model railway trashed by vandals, restored with Rod Stewart's help. This happened 5 years ago. And there's a picture that really... This is Market Deeping Model Railway Club's £30,000 display, which was trashed. And A surge in crowdfunded donations included £10,000 from singer and model railway enthusiast Sir Rod Stewart, which allowed the club to raise more than £107,000 for repairs. And there's even a photograph of Rod being presented with a model wagon gift by Railway Modeler magazine editor Steve Flint. So it's very interesting. I imagine it's very hard to get a photo opportunity with Rod, but Rod will make time to appear in a photograph in person with Railway Modeler magazine editor Steve Flint. So hats off to Rod.
This is the thing that a heritage chart has the ability to do for me when I'm watching it, is all of this information that we've been discussing here, this all flashes through my mind as I'm watching the performance, because I'm making the connection. The train set, oh yeah, he bought, you know, it's like that's the process. And then I think back to the glory days, Rod's glory days, and I it's like a trip that goes, like a time slip that you pass through, and you're looking at Rod on the stage at the Rainbow in 1972 and thinking, I wonder if he knows where he's going in life and what point this is going to take you to, which is what happens with so many of these artists that get included in the Heritage Chart. It's like the journey that they've gone on, and then now we're here, sitting here, reviewing their new record, and it's fucking decades ago.
I know.
It's decades.
And it sounded good to me. I think your point, Sian, about the low-downness of Jules in the mix was a salient point, because where was Jules sonically? And I'm always quick, especially if you're on social media on the night of Jules' Hootenanny.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Then it's like a Jules Holland hate parade. And I genuinely don't understand it, because I think Boogie Woogie Piano is one of those things that people think they ought to dislike, but they haven't thought it through at all, you know, because just say you went to a mate's house and Jules Holland was there and you had a few drinks, and suddenly Jules went to the piano and said, shall we hear a bit of Boogie Woogie Piano?
Well, I'd say first, everyone's doing chopsticks a bit drunkenly, aren't they? Thinking that they're really, really good. He goes, out the way, everybody, carry on.
That's great, yeah. That's how...
Yeah.
That's the
Move
idea.
Over.
That's the idea.
Move over, I've got this.
I mean, I think if there is a human being in that room that isn't just utterly delighted that they're about to hear Jules Holland break out into a bit of fantastic sort of New Orleans boogie-woogie, then they're either a pervert or a monster. And I don't want to know them, because... And what even is boogie-woogie anyway? It's R&B played on the piano.
It's bloody joyous.
Yeah.
It's one of the most joyous forms of music going. I get into a thing, you know, quite often when you're reflecting on this, the music within this chart, it's a lot of it is a lot of white men playing blues, isn't it? It's like they revert back to this. Mm. Whereas Boogie Woogie doesn't hold that for me. It's like, it's just joyous.
It's party
joyous.
Music.
Yes.
It's total party music.
More power to his elbow.
People saying, oh, I don't like it when he kind of insists on appearing on later with other bands and they haven't got any choice. They've got a choice. Don't be silly.
Can we, quickly mention the There's Uncertain Smile, which wouldn't be anything without that. It was a saxophone solo initially.
Was it?
And then he got Jules in, who did it in one take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
even at the time... I remember thinking, that's a bit unusual.
Yes.
You know, hearing that he was a guest on it, because obviously I'd come from the reference of him being in Squeeze. I was the guy who bought the Boogie Woogie 78 EP that came out.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the first release that Jules did while still in Squeeze.
Wow, brilliant.
I love that.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
oh,
it's a great
good.
Little EP.
I'll dig it out.
Shall we move on?
Mm.
Yeah, we've got Yes, other artists are available, Sean. Let's move on to Mark Knopfler. There's only a tiny bit. It's just a taster. They're going to get the video next week. A taster of his Guitar Hero album. What I wanted to know is, we see a graphic. It's Peter Blake style. Lots of guitarists sort of superimposed as if they were in one lovely group. Obviously, many are dead. Some are still alive. But in the corner, there's a phone box and there's Roger Daltrey sitting on it with a cup of tea. Did anyone else notice this and know why?
Oh, I think I do know why.
Oh,
actually,
is there
yes.
a reason? Oh, my goodness.
Because it's for the Teenage Cancer Trust.
That's
and Roger
it.
Daltrey is the head honcho.
But why is he on a telephone
music honcho.
Box?
It's Peter Blake.
Okay. Peter Blake.
That's what Peter Blake does. He puts people on telephone boxes.
But is it a real Peter Blake?
Yes, it is. It's actually a Peter Blake print.
I thought it was commissioned for the album.
Oh.
And therefore, we get, as you pointed out, Sean, we get this sort of weird rotating version of it.
Yes.
Just what I loved about that, though, was Mike was teasing it like, don't worry, next week we're going to have the whole thing.
Mm.
It's only a rotating album sleeve. That's all this promo is, and that's all it is.
Oh.
And the brilliant thing is he said, he sort of teases it like we've received the first 45 seconds, so they're working on the rest of it.
Yeah.
So that by next week, we will be able to show you the whole thing. Mm. Go on YouTube and you realise it's been up for 5 days anyhow.
They do this from time to time. I remember before Christmas, Denise Pearson sent a slightly wonky mobile phone clip of her Christmas song, which was about 40 seconds long. I felt like Mike should have been a bit more hard line and say, look, Denise, Five Star was a long time ago. You either send us the whole video, and to be honest, make more of a bloody effort with it, or we're not going to show it at all.
In a past life, I was a TV plugger, and I used to, you know, it was the height of the chart show. Saturday mornings on ITV. As a TV promoter, you used to sort of making it sound so much grander than it was, but you'd sort of plot this campaign, and the campaign would always start with the tease. The tease that would be on the week, so the Saturday before the Friday release, it would appear on the chart show. So you'd give the chart show the 45-second clip.
Mm.
I think Mike's... This again reveals the genius of Mike and how he knows how to run a show that has a little bit of drama in it. I mean, it's just that brilliant thing of like, oh, wow. So if next week I watch it, I'm going to see the whole thing. 3 minutes of a rotating album sleeve rather than 45 seconds. And by the way, I know it's for a good cause and all that, but it's fucking shit, isn't it?
Well... I always try and look on the bright side, accentuating the positive, because it's a re-recording of the local hero theme.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
it sounds a lot like the original. It doesn't sound like there's 60 guitarists on there, and I kind of want it to. I want to know what 60 guitarists.
So, like a double track guitar, it would be a 60 tracked guitar, which would sound. You know, when they play the White Album all at once.
Oh yeah.
The artist who did that, and it starts to then warp, and everything goes out of time. It should sound like that. 60 people playing local hero theme, but with a different time signature and put it all together. Oh. There's an idea. Should we move on?
I've got one little detail that I want to bring into the mix.
Please do.
So as we know, you know, when Mike is introducing the track, we get like the title page that with the Heritage Chart graphic.
Yes.
We get a picture of the artist in the middle and we get the name of the artist at the top. So that was obviously Mark Knopfler's Guitar Heroes. It was written Mark Knopfler's Guitar House.
Yes, I saw that, yes.
And I thought... this is quite interesting. Is there someone somewhere taking the piss? Like, as in, the guy who's doing the graphics is thinking, oh, fuck this. And he's just like, well, how can I subvert this whole show? I know. I'll just put in these little twists and turns that...
They do need to get someone to kind of proofread the charts because they do allow the occasional
error. There are a few mistakes, yes. They do allow.
I might volunteer. But anyway, moving on.
At number 38, it's Dion and Shemekia Copeland and Mama Said. And Dion seems to be, he's inside, this is an interior shot, but he seems to be in a luxury castle because there's a beautiful swirling staircase behind him. And Shemekia is in her back garden. What did you think of this, Sean?
I really got quite emotional here. I have to just point out that, okay, so Dion DiMucci... If push comes to shove, he's my favourite singer of all time.
Incredible.
So
I am
totally on board with Dion DiMucci. You know, he's... Is he 75 in this one? You know, he had his first hit back in 1958. I mean, surely, if anyone's going to qualify for the Heritage Chart, it's a 75-year-old who's still, in theory, got the chops. But this is where Heritage... gets in the way a little bit for me because, as I've just explained to you, he's up there with my favourite vocalists. You know, the doo-wop era that he recorded and then into the 60s, it was just phenomenal. But then he got smitten with this thing that we've alluded to already, which is, old white men sing the blues. And it's like they always seem to... it's their default. It's for a lot of performers. They want to go back. They want to go back to the music that's inspired them, very obviously. So over the last sort of couple of decades, I've not given... I don't really give too much time over to the music of one of my musical heroes, which is a shame. And therefore, I was glad to see he was happy. He definitely had a smile on his face in the performance. So that warms me. Mm. I feel good for Dion. And I guess he wants to do it. He's not. No one's forcing him to do this. And he's been, you know...
It's a passion project, as you say.
Well, yeah, but he does this every bloody 6 months. He releases another album. It's loads of guests that get involved. And because he's got the heritage, he can pull on the likes of Springsteen to appear on his albums. He can pull in the big guns as well. But they're just all a bit...
But does it matter if someone put it on in the background? It's that sort of music, isn't it?
I mean, I'm happy that he's happy. That's all I can say about it.
He did look very happy.
He looks really happy.
I quite liked it myself.
Did you like the song?
It was fascinating. I was fascinated by how at ease both Dion and Shemekiah seemed with the saucy interplay that the song demanded of them. It got into a sort of role play vibe of a bit of
call and response.
Yeah, come hear the vibes.
Very much COVID vibes too, as well, because they are clearly miles apart, and they may be in different continents. And one of those things, we were used to seeing this for 2 years, and now it looks quite odd when people really aren't in the same space. I found that interesting. Also, the fact that his home phone is in the background, expecting him to go, "Excuse me," and come pick it up, you know, or it just doesn't ring very often. I mean, I think that was good. He is in his hallway in this video.
As a big fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I really like watching those spacious reception areas with spiral staircases. So I kept expecting Larry David to walk in at any moment.
I think that's a really interesting point that you brought up there, Pete, about the interplay of an older artist with a younger artist. Do we not feel a bit uncomfortable with that? And is that the disillusionment that an older artist carries forward? A bit like the Rod with the interplay with the two backing singers. Yeah. It's like, that does make me uncomfortable.
I feel like the age difference between them might not be quite as vast as we might think. I think she has clearly looked after herself very well. She had her break as a blues singer back in 1979. So that's only about 17 years after Dion had his break, maybe. And so maybe that makes it not as weird where the end where she says, "You're my little moochie poochie" to him.
I think you're right. I think she's just, you know, she's just looked after herself extremely well.
Yeah.
And so is he. I mean, you know, all credit to the man.
Amazing.
He does look really good.
Looks, and still has a beautiful vocal tone. I just feel that it's all a bit...
It didn't seem sinister to me.
Would you download it? Would you play it on your show? Weed the garden?
Would you play it on your show? That's always a good point.
Maybe I would. If it was 1982 and it was in the W.H. Smith sale and it was 20 pence, I'd definitely buy it.
Well, now, interestingly, when we are talking about certain errors in the show, Mike Reed calls this number 37 where we know it was number 38. When he back announces it, it's like, "Mike, it's your chart. Get it right." Because number 37 is the Young Pups, Liam Gallagher and John Squire together with Raise Your Hands. Sean, you're sighing.
I have no words. I mean, this was the one clip where I thought, I just had no interest at all. And that's not, you know, there's been a lot of... When the press reviews appeared...
This is a man who appeared on the cover of What's the Story, Morning Glory, Sean. Why you have no interest in Liam Gallagher's subsequent...
No, I do have an interest, and I will always tune into the moment, but it's just that there's nothing going on here for me. I've made notes on every single entry that we've got to do, and I've got nothing to say about this. And I don't mean that in a sort of... You know, that's because I'm sort of trying to be coy and not slag it off. I just literally have nothing to say about this record.
Are they heritage artists?
Now, I've got something to say about that, because I do believe that... So we've got Liam and John in the chart. We've got The Farm in there.
Yes. Shed 7 are in there.
Shed 7.
Pet Shop Boys are in there.
Pet Shop Boys, yeah. I think I'm going 80s. I mean, 1989 is our cut-off on the Heritage. And I feel that Mike needs a few boundaries. I think he does need to rein it in a little bit.
Take that regularly in here. No. So what do you think about them? Because I think they're Heritage.
Yeah,
I really do.
That's a really good point.
And yet, I don't think that John Squire is. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Can we unpack that just a little bit?
Let's unpack it.
What's going on there? So we've got two artists from the same period.
Yeah.
And we're going, that's Heritage, that's not Heritage. Yeah. Is it, and, you know, my qualification at the top of the show was an artist who's gladly going to celebrate their past but also keep moving forwards. So that, to me, qualifies. That's sort of putting Liam in there, but that's for sure. Mm. I can't get to the point why I've decided that The Farm, and is it like it comes from a slightly indie background? Is that where in Shed 7 we're not? Is it coming from that point that says this is not Heritage? Is Heritage mainstream? Was Heritage, you know, was the
act? We have punk acts though in here.
Yeah.
The Automatics are in here.
Yeah, but is that Heritage? There's a question mark that hangs over that.
Yeah.
I personally feel comfortable with these being categorised as Heritage and Shed 7 as well, especially in mind of the fact that I'm seeing a lot of posters for instance, the Britpop orchestral concerts. Have you seen those posters?
No,
I haven't. Oh, yeah.
And what they've done is...
So post-Acid House, post-Factory...
Simon Fowler.
Hacienda, yeah.
Yeah, so for this one you've got Simon. Well, I think they're all doing separate turns,
right?
With an orchestra. So Simon Fowler does the hits of Ocean Colour Scene, and you have Saffron from Republica doing a bit, and you have weirdly Mark Chadwick from The Levellers. I don't think anyone would have described The Levellers as Britpop.
No.
But you could have to assume that they. You think about all the people they asked before they got to Mark Chadwick. And then the guy, your man from the Blue Tones,
Mark Morris,
who has some previous that I don't think we can really go into.
There's a bit of previous on this, though. I was going to, enormously bad taste, call it Restraining Order Rock, because...
Very good.
There is... Ian Brown's been chucked, obviously, by John Squire, but there was an incident with Liam and his girlfriend at the time, and there's the men of a certain age who sort of let rip in public, maybe after... a whiskey or two. There's also that in the genre. I mean, maybe we should swiftly move on, but that also makes it uncomfortable, is you are getting out some sort of 90s dinosaurs and just...
Yeah, there's a slight... obviously, we get to this area of music and there's a little bit of, you know, a Fathers for Justice kind of thing.
Does it literally cut off at 1999?
I don't know. People that had their success... before 1999, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's the cutoff. Maybe Mike can reach out to us and explain.
I think it's a back catalogue issue. I think if they start selling back catalogue or it gets repackaged, that's when it is. Because I would expect to see Girls Aloud in there post that. Wouldn't you? You know, there's the four of them, they reform, it's a sad song about Sarah, da-da-da-da, that's Heritage
Chart. Right. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, this does raise questions for Noel Gallagher, because this is very much the thick end of the wedge here. It's very clever of Liam to enlist the services of John Squire, because it doesn't work the other way. If Noel asked Ian Brown to do a thing with him, and you'd have Ian Brown bellowing Noel's slightly journeyman compositions. No one wants to hear that. So I think Noel must be sort of seething in his armchair.
Oh, that's good. Or has he just managed to let go of it all over the years? He's just reached a zen-like quality of mind that says, I don't give a fuck anymore.
Do you think Noel doesn't give a fuck?
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? But I still feel uncomfortable with this being in the Heritage Chart. Okay. I heard you both state your cases. I don't want it in there. I don't want it tainting my experience here, especially when we come to the next tune.
Starship. Oh, Jefferson Starship. Yeah, that was the rewind bit. That was the
That's
kind
right.
of, that, so that was the double Heritage
high of having going back to a song that was previously number one in the Heritage chart 2 years previously.
And I know why.
Why?
Because it's amazing.
I liked it too.
It's bloody amazing.
We talked about it last time because he's wheeling it out all the time, Sean.
But I'm not surprised. It really has affected me, that song. So this is my big hit from watching this episode. This really, really connected for me. And I felt really emotionally involved in the performance, in the song. It gave me... I also had the knowledge, because I'd heard you guys talk about it with Lawrence before. So I had the knowledge of the lead guitarist being a member of Quicksilver Messenger. And that was that when I was talking about Rod and referring back to, like, 1972. So there he is in 1967 in the fucking heart of it, like at the movement that was happening in San Francisco. And now, fast forward all those decades, and there he is on the Heritage chart, belting out a killer of a tune.
It is a great tune, yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
I got excited, sorry.
It's a good, you know, it's a reminder that this is a good way for boomers to go.
Number 33 is The Corgis and Letter to Geelong from the Everybody's Gotta Learn Sometime Hitmakers, etc., etc. This seems to have all of the family on it. Sean, what did you think of this mild lament?
Okay, so this was the moment in the show where things started to get a bit fuzzy, because there I was watching this performance, and for any of the listeners to this podcast that have not watched this performance, I really recommend that you go off and just grab a look at this, both this and the next one as well, because these are the ultimate DIYs.
Yeah.
These are the videos where someone somewhere has gone, do you know what, if we make a video, we might be able to get it on the Heritage chart, and that could really do wonders for the promotion of this track. Now, back in the mid-90s, I was a younger man, and... I spent a lot of time going out, and I spent a lot of time going out and then going back to people's houses. Right. And when we used to go back to the house after you've been out for the night, classic night out down at Turn Mills with the Heavenly Social, and a group of us would all go back to someone's house, and there would the party would continue. It was always my favourite part of the evening of going out, and music would be played. Drinks would be drunk. Spangled is the frame of mind that one would get to at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And this performance would have been on high rotation at that point in my life, because it's just incredible. Because it's one of those things, it's one of those jaw-dropping moments. And we used to have, because this is obviously pre-YouTube and internet, so I was working at the time on the Jonathan Ross show. I was like the music booker, and we used to get... People just used to send VHS tapes in of themselves performing, and it was of this quality. So I would have a little catalogue of VHS cassettes that we would be watching. And obviously there's an element...
And when you're saying quality, what are you talking about? We're talking green screen here, really.
Well, it's green screen iMovie here, but there was this one VHS tape that comes to mind that was on high rotation. It was we referred to it as Dancing Bloke. Let's get Dancing Bloke on. And what it was this guy who was... He was sinewy of his... Like Iggy Pop's physique, let's call it that. And he'd obviously rented out his local Legion club, and he got a couple of flashing lights in, and he got a mate of his who had a VHS camera, and he danced to Technotronic. And it was phenomenal. It was incredible. And the reason it was the reason why these clips work is because he believed in it. Mm. He totally believed that he was sharing his skill. Now, there's something that happens when I watch these types of clips, because I get drawn into their level of I feel even feel a bit wrong saying that they're deluded because they're doing something that they really love and they just want to share it. Yeah. It's not, I'm not going to get mocking about it. It's like, and so you enter into that. If you,
well, I don't we can be call it. Why don't we call it passion?
Passion,
because it is a passion. It is a self-belief, and everybody who stands up in front of any audience needs some sort of self-belief. Otherwise, you would crumble, and so it is important to foster that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I get from these.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's the song itself is, it's one of those songs that the lyric is a letter addressed to someone far away.
Yes,
I feel like there's probably more of these, aren't there? But I can't think of any.
Yeah, we thought there was a letter rock genre. We must think of some examples, and
I definitely have some in my collection. Yes. So. Mm. It's a letter to relatives that have moved, loved ones that have moved to Australia.
Yes.
It's a kind of classic mum and dad letter. Oh, Penelope's just passed GCSEs, and so and so's just taken their driving test and done a. They've just been laid. There's a bit. Some of it's a bit glum. There's a bit, bits where someone's been laid off from work, but they've just got a job somewhere else, and it's a living. So it operates at the sort of slightly humdrum details you often get in.
It's not one important letter to someone who's not expecting it. It's lots of letters, a bit like and so and so's tooth fell out.
And then there's this bit where they're a bit worried about they've read reports about lethal octopuses being washed up on the beach in Australia, and so they mention that, do be careful. There's we've read about this thing in Australia. And seconds after that happens, then there's this transition to Mike Reed. You go, that's put me in a holiday mood. And he's not joking. I think he's... Anyway,
But Pete, just to jump in, I want more of that from Mike. I actually feel like there's moments where I think Mike's just been a little bit lazy with, And this is. I love it when he gives just a little hint of the fact that, because what that reveals is that he's actually watched it.
But the thing is, I don't think he's being sarcastic. I think he did say that's put me in a holiday mood.
But he has no context. Mike lives in a world where he expects that we all know who the artists are, what they've done, that we're not going to start Googling anything or looking at Wikipedia. He will just go, it's so-and-so, and then it's so-and-so. That's quite interesting. There's absolutely nothing else around it, say, rather than this is nice, put me in a holiday mood. Yeah, lovely.
Anyway, the octopus referred to was the deadly blue-ringed octopus, because I looked at contemporaneous news reports of these octopuses that were washed up on Darwin Beach.
You can't say he doesn't do his research. What about jellyfish? I would have thought that they were much worse. I mean, that's what I'd be
scared of. People do fear the jellyfish.
So that's fine.
In a way that
sharks, jellyfish, were all right. We know they're dangerous. Octopus, that's friendly. No, it's going to kill you.
I think that in my head, the picture I have of an octopus in my head is as a slightly friendlier animal than the squid. But I don't know why that is. That's probably because I'm thick.
Oh, man, thank you, corgis, for bringing this into our lives.
So it's a big problem. They were right. The corgis were right to mention it in this letter, because there's a whole load of instances of people picking up, taking selfies with this octopus in the palm of their hand. And if it even stings them once, it could paralyse them or, worse, kill them. And
thank you, Dr. Pete.
So there we go.
And remember, listeners, they're not real corgis. OK, next we have Sandy Tom. Just a small bit about this. And Simon Huff from Big Country. Again, that two artists, should they be together? Oh, they're singing together. Some of the parts greater than the whole. Sean?
I have a moment, and again, I'm referring back to those late nights, early mornings of watching stuff, where we would have a mantra, and it applies to the process of watching this, and it was, go with it. And when you go with something, you start to get something else out of the experience. So you can find... It's just a letting go of all your prejudice. It's just really, really going with the flow of what is being presented to you in front of you.
Yes.
And it starts
to take... It's quite tepid, Sean, though, isn't it?
It's more than tepid, but that's the go-with-it moment. Yeah. That's the moment where you have to give in to this. Something comes up, although I weirdly was drawn to his hair. I did like his haircut. It was... Yeah. it was, you can see I'm slightly modelling the same haircut.
A little
slightly
bit mullety, like a silver, a silver mullet.
With a little bit of rod puff on top. Mm. I like that, and it was really cut well. So there you go.
He's the lead singer. He's the front man of the current lineup of Big Country. And I read a little bit about their history, their recent history. Obviously, Stuart Adamson is no longer with us. And there seemed to be a sort of suggestion that it took a long time for Big Country to make him a proper member of the band.
Right.
Which in turn...
You had a pass of initiation tests and
in
things.
In turn makes
blood
me
letting
think...
rituals.
Do you think maybe he was... the front man of a Big Country tribute band, and because his voice is very similar to Stuart Adamson's, and they held him at arm's length slightly just in case he was so, you know, rendered mad with gratitude by being made the new lead singer of Big Country that he couldn't sort of handle it and just exploded, like you might do if you're a Big Country fan that suddenly was asked to be the lead singer of Big Country. So my theory is that they slightly held him at arm's length. Mm. Just to make sure that he wasn't crazy. And then when the transactional nature of this relationship settled down and they became comfortable with the fact that they needed something from him just as much as he needed something from them, they said, OK, Simon Huff, you're a member of the band. Because he's got no other history. He hasn't even got his own Wikipedia page. So... yeah, you know.
Do you know what? I love your theory. I think you've gone down that avenue, and it's definitely down there. But at the bottom of that avenue, it's just money. It's just literally how much do we have to pay him? The founding members of a band, when they take in a new member, the first conversation is, "What is it? Should we give him a wage, or does he take? Or does he take a cut?" That's the be all and end all.
Yeah, you're right.
Of someone coming in into the fold, so to speak.
Well, the two original members of Big Country that are still there are Bruce Watson, the guitarist, and the drummer that Smash Hits, as Sean, as a alumnus of Smash Hits, you all know. Do you remember what they used to call him?
Is he the Wee Shite? we called them the Wee Shite. No, carry on. Mark, I'm not joking.
Mark, unpronounceable name.
Oh, that's right. Of course, yes. No, there was another theory that if you have four people in a band, there's always a wee shite. Sorry, everybody, but they're under 5'2". They shouldn't really be there. They're always lovely. I mean, they're just a lovely person. Sorry, that's a completely different theory. My theory on this is the two-sided ego prop, where you, as I say, where you get two distinct personalities that really can't make it on their own. Team them up together, and somehow both of them feels really good for having done it. They're doing it for the music, but also there's an enormous amount of... Yeah, I feel bad about this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could be. Definitely. Yeah, I see that. Yes.
I like the Heritage Chart because we have the voting countries interspersed between the rundown. And so suddenly you'll get this hit of a very... put the saturation really high in a lot of stock photos of beautiful areas of the world. Ooh, puts me in the holiday mood, thinks Mike. So we here's some facts about African voting. The countries include Algeria, Kenya and Morocco. And we go, oh, that's nice, that's interesting. Oh, I must book holiday. And then we go on. I will mention this further, was why I'm mentioning in those African countries now, because there's something that comes in that's quite surprising.
Hey, Sean, can I just jump in and just again, I'm bringing in, I think we have to every now and again just make reference to the genius of Mike.
Oh, yes, please,
because
do. Yeah, yeah.
This is great, this. The travelogue shots that pepper the show.
I mean, don't they make you want to go on holiday completely?
He does it so bloody well. Mm. So what he's doing in that moment is he's taking you out of this strange box-like world that he's sitting in. He's like, you know, it's dark. We're cutting to videos. It's all pretty functional. And then all of a sudden, they'll throw in these beautifully high-saturated photos, as you made reference to, and you just feel like you've escaped for literally 30 seconds, and then you're back in. Mm. It's brilliant.
That's a good point.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, at times you do. It's just nice to just briefly stop off at Mount Kilimanjaro before the return of Mark Knopfler.
Yes. Before we get to Mark, can I make reference to a band that is mentioned in the rundown from, is it 39 to whatever? Edison Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Lighthouse with a cover version of Fun, 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 the Beach Boys, which is... that's worth just get, although we don't get a blast of it. Mm. I highly recommend, dear listeners, all go off and have a listen to that.
Is and they're good? All smiling in that photo.
They're all smiling in that photo. Now, I've got that. One little reminisce that's not mine, that it comes courtesy of a dear friend of all three of us as we sit around this room, a friend of ours, mutual friend by the name of Martin Kelly.
Oh, lovely.
Martin Kelly, as we all know, was in a wonderful band called East Village. But before they were East Village, they were called Episode 6. Is that correct?
I'm correct. I didn't know.
Yeah, Episode 6. And was it High Wycombe that they hailed from?
Yeah, Princes Riseborough, I think. Okay, which is High Wycombe, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a local rehearsal studio that they sort of used to gather in, the four original members. And Edison Lighthouse were booked into the same rehearsal studios. And Martin swears that every time they walked past the door, they were running through Love Goes Where My Rosemary Goes. And he said he'd hear the singer Kelly Elf going, OK, perhaps we should do that one more time.
Well, that's the one everyone wants to hear.
It's it. It's the only one. I don't want to hear their version of the Beach Boys. Fun, fun, fun.
I kind of do that, but anyway.
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, Mark Knopfler, let's get back to him. He's on twice.
Mm.
Ahead of the Game, this is. It's an original piece, has a black and white video, and it has a proper video. My first question, my only question, is did he just fall asleep midway?
It does look like he's about to nod off at one point. It's very sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a standard black and white, couple of cameras in a room, let's film the band running through the... This is not what I tune in to the Heritage Chart for. I don't. This is not... If he's falling asleep, I'm falling asleep watching this. But here lies the clue.
Right.
OK? So Mike makes reference to the fact that he was the blue plaque reference. Did you get that?
Oh, yeah, there's a new... Yes. Yes, there's a
blue... unveiled one by his studio his studio.
Mike contributes to the Talking Pictures monthly magazine, and he's got a column that is all about blue plaques. So Mike is going around the country revealing blue plaques in places that we didn't know where they were. So this is Mike's other thing, the blue plaque thing. So what does that say? He's basically that week, he's gone and revealed the blue plaque at the studio where Mark Knopfler has recorded that. Mike has met up with Mike. So who has said the words that he reveals at the top of the show that says, there's not much like this on television?
That's
or
amazing.
Some words for
well
that.
Done.
There you go.
That's
a penny dropped.
A man of few words, but he certainly makes them count, does Knopfler. What I liked about the video is it reminded me of when you go on holiday in a Greek island and you see very old men playing backgammon in a cafe, and almost part of the rules of the game of backgammon is that you have to move as little as possible. You can watch them for 5 minutes sometimes and no one moves. And then finally, it's like watching a tortoise in at high noon, and then one of them will move a piece. And no one in the video was moving very much. I think instead of, in this country, guitarists, that's a sort of the equivalent of watching old Greek geezers play backgammon on a Greek island.
But there's a thing called slow radio, isn't there? This is slow TV. This is you're just literally watching.
Well, it's quite ambient, really.
Heritage Chart slow.
Yeah.
You wonder if at any point someone might have said to Mark, fancy just putting the sweatband on just for one more time?
Well, I was going to say,
dare.
It must be incredibly liberating to be Mark Knopfler because he doesn't look like Mark Knopfler anymore. So he can walk down the street and no one's going to go walk alive. No one's going to shout anything at him.
Yeah.
He can go about his business as a multimillionaire, probably, under the radar. And that must be really lovely.
Same with Chris Lowe of the Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah.
Who would recognise Chris Lowe?
Yeah.
You stare at him and you think, I'll try and remember what he looks like. But you just wouldn't.
You know. It's a beautiful existence.
Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Number 15 is Crowded House. Is all I can say. There was a big pause there for a reason, I think. Now, Pete, you are the Crowded House man of the room.
We defer to you.
What on earth is this about? Come on, you now have to.
Explain. If people know one thing about me, it's about my adoration of Crowded House.
Yeah.
And I love this song, Oh Hi. I love this kind of slightly West Coast Fleetwood Mac vibes that it's got. The video made me quite scared. It's let me explain the conceit of the video. I think it's filmed in Amsterdam. It looks like they're in Holland. They're in mainland Europe, in a city somewhere on the continent. And it's a small child with really good dance moves, dancing and performing to Oh Hi. But you don't see their face because digitally superimposed over their face is the head of Neil Finn, and it's too large for the child's body. So it's like a mask. It's like a slight Aphex Twin vibes, but it's not still. It's not a cardboard depiction image. It's not literally a mask. It's like a cutout video image of his.
And he's lip syncing. He's singing.
He's lip syncing. Yeah, and the way they've done it is so when the boy, the girl, whoever's doing the dancing, turns side on, then it's a little bit like the effect it has is a bit like the Charlie Says public information.
Yeah, so there are two modes. They're front face, and then there's profile, and that's it.
Yeah.
Oh no, we get the back next of head as well.
Oh, we get back of head. Yeah. Okay, the three
back
modes
of head as well.
Yeah, you do.
And how does this make you feel, Pete, when you watch this video?
Well, at 3 a.m, which is when the Heritage Chart Show is on, it would give you the heebie-jeebies.
This is my whole point about that. There's a reason why they put it out at 3 a.m. They want that slightly, if not alcohol or drug-induced, but a slightly spangled frame of mind that will allow you to go with this whole process. I think that's a genius move, the 3 a.m.
Well, 3 a.m. is really the only time that the Heritage Chart Show stands any chance of making sense. it's a strange video. It's a very strange video, but I love the song.
I've really enjoyed it. I really genuinely enjoyed it, but I just felt like it. Again, this is the slight personality of the Heritage Chart, where it sort of goes one direction, which is a really great song and a really great video. I don't know if I want that in my Heritage Chart.
You want a more homemade cut and paste affair.
Yeah, that's ringing my bells every time.
Yeah, Lawrence made a similar point.
There were too many questions. The longer this video goes on. I mean, it is a child, isn't it?
The child
can really dance.
Really dance.
The child is tiny, and I was getting more and more confused whether they've made the body of the child tinier and the head bigger, whether the child is actually just like an 18-year-old who just is exceptionally small. There was too many questions, and it got more and more disturbing. And actually, I just found it really creepy by the end. It's a very strange choice, I thought.
It was.
It would really unsettle someone of an older generation than even our age.
Well, it did.
You know, if you've got someone tuning in for Marty Wilde and you're seeing that, that's going to throw you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Slight Aphex Twin vibes.
Maybe. Now, we're punctuated again by the voting countries after this point, and Mike says, you know, jovially, these are the countries whose, you know, names only have four letters. We go, OK, let's go with this. Laos, Peru, Iran and Cuba. What? Iran? Iran? So someone isn't voting from Iran. Now, surely this is like headline news that, you know, while there's some other stuff going on, people are pressing the online button and voting for Mark Knopfler or something like this.
Well, I think.
What are we thinking of Iran being a voting country? Is this actually true? Has he made a mistake?
Romantic notion that there's someone in Iran who's getting on a bit, and they remember the pre-Ayatollah days, where the Shah of Iran, when Iran was really racing towards this real westernized society. And someone like Mark Knopfler comes on, which is, I think, Dire Straits would have just started to put out records in the dying days of the Shah's reign. Or, you know, as you mentioned before, Jefferson Airplane. Mm. And they shed a nostalgic tear for what Iran could have been. And for them, My Creed's Heritage Chart is a sort of emotional lifeline, a little flicker of hope.
And they've gone to the internet cafe, they've made sure they do it in time, and they've pressed that button.
They're drinking their minty tea.
I mean, do you think that there's... We've all had the experience of being broadcasters, and we know that sometimes we might sort of twist the truth just a little bit, but you know, invariably,
not me.
Voice, no, there's a little voice in the back of our head saying, "I better be careful by where I'm going with this." I've had that experience certainly when working for the BBC, and then you go, "Okay, yeah, I'll rein that. I'll bring that back. I won't go the full distance with the full blown lie." Whereas Mike's just standing there, and every word that's coming out of his mouth is a lie.
Are you seriously suggesting, Sean, that no one in Iran is watching My Creed's Heritage Chart? I would implore you to think very hard about the claim that you have just made, Sean.
I stand by it.
Marty Wilde is next, and I think this is prime HC territory.
Sure. Yeah. This is what we tune
no
in
debate
for.
Here.
This is it. This gives me everything that
I want. Needs no introductions. Our listeners will know who Marty Wilde is.
Yeah. Will they know that he's 84 years old? 84! Oh,
yeah.
And
yeah.
he's like...
Looking good on it.
He's looking great. Mm. The syrups that still come out of my balls.
I mean, I wouldn't normally mention a toupee, but I think we all know that it's a toupee.
I'm sorry, but I'm so naive, I thought it was his real hair. No, I'm not joking. Do you think it is a toupee? I thought maybe he's just held on to it.
Marty was... Okay, so he was like, you know, obviously he came through in the first wave of British rock and roll singers and was pretty soon made redundant almost overnight. But not as well, because Marty was a very, very shrewd man who got his foot got his finger in many pies in the music industry. But what was noticeable was the hair went quite quickly early on, like a few of them. And, you know... In those early years of being a rock and roll teen idol, there weren't many bald guys. Mm. So Marty switched to the toupee fairly quickly.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know my rock toupee history properly there.
But I love the way that the wig that obviously comes out for public performances has got the slight quiffy sort of... Mm. He's got the sideburns as well.
Slightly 70s Elvis kind
slightly
of
70s
arrangement.
Elvis, yeah.
And... I loved it. It's a song. It's a very kind of melancholy song. It's a little bit reminds me of the Corgi song because it's a sort of.
There's a letter in there.
It's about his mother, isn't it? Though there are all these shots of his mother.
It's called "Streaming from Both Eyes," which is brilliant because a younger generation would go, "Oh yeah!" But it's obviously he's crying. His tears are coming from both eyes because he's realizing that he's reaching the end of his life, but there is a payoff. Because he's going to see his mum and dad. Mm. Right, and that's the whole crux of both the song and the video performance as we see we're inside his house.
His palatial home.
That's got to be in Surrey, hasn't it? That's got that sort of slightly faded rock star, Surrey Hills, that type of vibe. And we're in the house, and then we're in his room, the room that's still set up for recording, and then we see some of the memorabilia that he's collected. And I was drawn in. Is that Buddy Holly's guitar that he's got up on the wall?
It
looked like it was.
Yeah.
So he's got, you know, and then we see pictures.
He's got his emails open as well on one of the shots. Yeah, on his computer. Dear Marty, have you finished this video yet? Oh, bugger.
But what's... Again, I will refer to the go with it moment because I really had to just let go of everything.
I thought this was lovely,
I thought this was amazing. I really had a lovely feeling.
It is a bit tears to the eye.
Cheery, streaming from both eyes. I was there. And it did the thing that sometimes you can get with the Heritage Chart. It made one reflect on one's own life. And where we're at in this part of our life.
I like the fact that he writes a letter to dead parents, presumably with a fountain pen that's probably worth thousands of pounds. But when he's at the piano and he's writing lyrics, it's a biro. It's just a pick. So obviously, you know, he compartmentalises.
He's a compartmentaliser.
I
go with all of that. It's just the one thing that slightly broke the spell for me, not in a bad way particularly, but is, you know, obviously we've been discussing his toupee and...
we cut away to a shot of him outside his house, and we see that his house has got a thatched roof. And he's like, if you put a huge pair of wraparound aviator shades around the house, it would look like his face.
Love that.
I mean, you've got to, do dogs love look, that. Do dogs look like their owners? I think we need to start actually doing. The houses look like that. Have a look. It's uncanny, I tell you.
Has he grown into the house or has the house grown into him?
It's beautiful.
Amazing.
It's beautiful.
What a lovely
I say, you know, you just don't get this from any other programme.
No.
It's unlike anything else around.
I've got to say, I felt like Mike missed the bloody trick here, because if he referred back, was it with the corgis, where he refers back and goes, makes you want to go on holiday? He could have come out of this with, well, makes you think about your own death, doesn't it?
That's exactly what we can't have him say, because it's just too, it's just the thing that's hiding in plain sight. We never, ever talk about death.
Oh dear, madness.
Quite.
With Suggs bless Cam.
Bless
yes,
him, bless him, bless him.
Yes. I thought this was absolutely splendid. I loved this, loved actually. It. Yeah. What did you like about it, Sean?
We start the video with the classic sort of video format, band, full band in performance, lead singer with cutaways in exteriors. Mm. And we find that it's inside Suggs's house.
Yes.
He's coming down the stairs. We're observing. So there's a little diverted tale that I've got to that I'd like to share with you two, which is reflective of that little moment there as Suggs opens up the front door. This was told to me by an unnamed source, and it goes like this. Suggs was doing a Radio 4 show, and the premise of the show was that musical guests would come round his house and they would record stuff in the house that would go out on the Radio 4 show. The guest on this particular show was Paul Weller. So the doorbell goes and Suggs's daughter goes and opens up the door. And he says, Paul Weller for Suggs. And she said, Dad, it's Paul Weller here. So Suggs comes down those stairs that we see in the video. And by which point, Paul's standing in that little, quite small hallway with the checkered tiles. And he's looking around and he says, all right, Suggs. He says, nice house. Very modest. To which Suggs, without missing a beat, says, well, didn't fuck off my band members, did I, Paul? So we see Suggs's modest house, modest terrace in Camden somewhere. And then we're trotting out down the road.
Did you like Suggs Cam, which we can explain for the people
Cam.
Who haven't seen it?
Yeah, so for people who don't know, we have this kind of camera which is suspended up above and in front of Suggs's.
Is it a drone,
head.
Do you think, or he's got some sort of harness on?
No, he's not wearing a harness because we don't see it.
Yeah. So is it a drone, do you think?
It might be someone holding it. But what's the payoff of this filming process is the slightly jerky movement that we get out of Suggs, which is classic Suggs, that sort of da da da, you know, the Rude Boy dance thing that he's always done, which I felt like that was a part of the process that was the filming. It was, again, to me, Madness are the ultimate heritage act. They embrace the past. They really, really celebrate their past. You know, they were like one of the first bands of a certain generation that I felt did that really well with the Madstock and the Finsbury Park gigs that were back in that's back in like 1992. So that's them only like just over the hill of 10 years, isn't it? Or coming 13.
Yeah,
or
no, it's
years.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, and they went all guns blazing, and it was like that was a shift. They went from not really getting even records on the radio to moving into another zone, and that zone was the heritage zone.
Yeah, no, that's very well put. You know, and they still write really great songs. This is a song that you know compares with their best stuff. The album that it came from, Theatre of the Absurd, is a very good record, and it's this weird sort of concept album about the fact that sort of during lockdown. They're quite a dysfunctional group anyway, and during lockdown, some of the natural sort of differences between certain band members really became quite inflamed. So they had to really work hard
to get back on the same page as friends and as a band, and all this happening with the backdrop of, you know, political and, you know, what the Conservatives are doing to this country and all that palaver. So quite an ambitious record.
Let's move on to Gary Numan. This threw me. This completely threw me because I didn't know it was
It's Gary Numan and Radio Heart together. And the song's called Radio Heart as well, isn't it?
I thought that was the song. What's the other Radio Heart element of it?
I thought Radio Heart might be the... I'm not sure. It's not very clear, but I think it's also the group, these Scottish brothers who was formed the basis of the group with which Gary Numan had collaborated. They asked him to come up with a vocal on some songs on this album they made. This is back in the 80s when he was on his uppers. And he said, I don't like all the album, but there are three songs on the album I can do vocals on and write lyrics for. And so that's how it... That's why it doesn't sound like Gary Numan, particularly.
But the whole point of this is... This is a track from 1988. This is where I think Mike gets lazy. Because why are we seeing this? Why is this in the chart? What is this doing? And it threw me, because I didn't have any of that information that you just gave us, Pete. And as he said, and now Gary Numan, I thought, oh, right, new Gary Numan. And there he is standing there. And I did literally for a minute, I thought, he's looking bloody good. And it's like, it's not... And then I went, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, this is too of an era. I thought they'd really, even the band, I thought the band looked spot on for like a, almost like a pastiche of an 80s thing. And I was thinking, and I was going down the route and I just thought, I better look this up. And that's when the moment revealed itself that it's a track from 1988. Now, come on, guys, explain to me, why is this in the chart?
Well, we never really get to the bottom of these mysteries, do we?
No, there was a reissue of Marianne Faithful last time, and it was an old track, 20 years old, on an old album. But because it was reissued, it seemed to qualify for the chart. So we have that, but that's never fully explained, or at least I've not seen it explained by Mike, who probably should say, you know, just ahead of the track, this is why it's in. Because you do go... Excuse me, or has it? It's all those questions. Being quite an old person by now, has this been done by a computer? You know, is this a new track? But they've made everyone look young. You don't know quite, and that's when there's no context, and Mike just won't do the context of it, where it gets really confusing, and you just feel completely discombobulated out of this world. But I think that is the Heritage Chart thing. You don't really know which universe you are in when you're watching it.
Yeah, you know,
as we have discussed.
You know, there's a process, but you just can never quite. You're just always on the verge of figuring it out, and then
that's it. You do.
It's Nick Kershaw's riddle. It's you kind of. I think I've
the
got
old
it.
Old man of arrogance, Aaron,
that goes round and
he's
round.
He's going round and round. Yeah. He's still going round and round.
Well, it gets you active in the program in a weird way.
Is this part of this narrative?
Sort of pulls
you
in because you're sort of puzzled by it. You're doing what I then did, which was, oh, I better look this up. Oh. 88. Oh, right. Oh, and I went down the route. Oh, I bet it's a compilation or it's, and then, so I went on, then I go on Discogs to see releases that, you know, and I got a flick to 2024 and there's no release. There's no release. Yeah. There's no compilation. I haven't had a compilation for years.
And the stock
picture. It's just random.
Like you were saying, the stock picture of Gary Numan on the chart rundown thing is him, maybe it's 10 years ago, but it's late Gary Numan.
Yeah,
so you're not sure what's going on. Would Gary be happy with this?
Always
it's
happy.
Like, yeah, you know, it's old, it's me, it's fine. Or would he be thinking, hey, you know, I think we need more clarity here?
Well, what about my new stuff? I mean, he's doing new stuff, so he might. But he qualifies, so maybe he needs to galvanise his fans to make sure that his new stuff is.
And they can be galvanised, I believe.
Yeah,
very strongly.
They're very galvanisable.
Just one link to at the top of the show. There are two foxtrels, as we used to call them at Smash Hits, on backing vocals. Two blondes, same. Maybe they're the same women. It's just, you know, a thousand years ahead now. And again, it's not really mirroring the PC values that we all hold dear in the modern world, is it, listeners? Number one. What's number one, Pete?
It's Billy Joel.
Woo!
Which I'm very happy about. How does everyone... So it's the first song he's written
for literally decades. It's called Turn the Lights Back On, and he'd said for many, many years that he was done with writing new songs, that he didn't have any more new music left in him. And this just landed out of nowhere. I'm really happy about it. I'm a big Billy Joel fan.
Massive fan. But there's a question mark over that story. It doesn't. Does that ring true to you?
I don't think so. I don't buy it either. It's like he's been writing songs. He's sitting in his garage.
And everyone's been saying, Billy, it's not Uptown Girl.
I think maybe he has been writing, but he's just not been showing them to people.
Yes, exactly.
And he's just sort of like, he made a decision that I'm done. I'm not going to compete in that world anymore. It discombobulates me or whatever. And I think he carried on writing classical pieces. But I interviewed him once, and he told me that most of the songs he's ever written start off as sort of quasi-classical piano pieces. And then he just decides later what sort of a pop song he's going to turn into.
That's really, you can hear it in this one as well.
Yeah.
Billy Joel will always hold a very, very, very special place in my heart, because it was back in... Pete, what year was The Stranger out?
About 76.
OK, so this is probably early 80s, and I was buying all... I used to live in Kingston, and there was, like, a record stall, and it was, like... It was in the Apple Market, and the guy who ran it was Dave. And every week I'd go and buy my records of Dave. And then this one week he said... Because there was, like, a hi-fi shop next to it. He said, you should go in there. They've got something you need to listen to. And they were mates with Dave, so he was obviously, you know, he gave them the nod. And they said, yeah, come upstairs. So I went upstairs, and it was the first CD player. And I went, oh, OK, yeah, I think I've heard about this. And they went, yeah, have a listen. And they put on Billy Joel's Stranger. And you had, this experience of hearing a CD. And all they kept saying was, listen, like that. And I went, what am I listening for? And they went, you can hear the pages turn as the orchestra... And that was it. That was the selling point of the CD player, was that you could actually hear the orchestra turning the pages on a Billy Joel record.
That would do it for me. What did you think of it, Sean?
I thought it sounded like it'd been written by AI.
Yes.
You know, when you tap something, Billy Joel doing a new song, a bit about being old, and it would come out with this, because none of the lyrics seemed to stick. There was no wit to them. There wasn't something, the tune... But you have quite a good theory about this, Pete, and I think yours may have pushed on the AI. Maybe AI is writing certain music for...
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that it sounded like it. I mean,
it's pleasant, but I can't think of any.
It's
hooks
got
in
all
it.
The sort of hallmarks of. It's got that quasi-classical thing that you can hear in a lot of Billy Joel ballads. Also, sounded a bit like "End of the Road" by Boys to Men.
But that's a great song, and I can.
But done by the piano man himself, it looked like it kind of was. I felt it had a sort of. Somewhat of a kind of now you don't have to worry what to play about my funeral quality to it. he's done us a solid there, as the young folks say. That's just like it has the remember me by this sort of quality by it.
And then when you said that, I went back and listened to it again, and there's a lyric that does say, I'm late, but I'm here right now. That's totally funeral, isn't it? Funeral call.
Funeral.
I mean, come on.
Funeral call, yes.
Yeah. I thought, that's on the nose. That's a good one.
Well,
he's going to mine that field.
Should we line up Marty Wilde's Streaming from Both Eyes, followed by Billy Joel?
Mm. And when you watch Talking Pictures, a lot of the stuff in the adverts is you know, very, like, those companies that encourage you to pay for your funeral so that your relatives don't have to worry about that sort of thing. It knows this is its natural place, in a way. Mm. And, you know, reminds me of another heritage hit, which was obviously the Beatles doing Now and Then a few months ago. That got to number two, I think, in the heritage chart.
Not number one.
Well, I think Ringo Starr was at number one that week. So Mike's having a bit of a laugh there.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So it reminded me a little bit of, Now and Then it was called, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'm a bit soft, you know.
I'm with you all the way on this. Yeah. Again, go with it. Just go with it.
Yeah.
Life's too short not to go with it.
I remember you played the first ever Guilty Pleasures I went to. I remember you played My Life by Billy Joel. And I just thought, in that moment, I thought, I looked up at you on stage and I thought, I love this man.
So, Sean, we've watched the whole episode now, 107. What were your feelings when the credits rolled?
The credits rolled. I felt like I had had an experience of musical highs, musical lows, but more importantly, I've been able to reflect upon my own life and where I was at. I am a DJ. And I realised, am I a heritage DJ? Have I slipped into that world now? Am I part of this? And I think if I am, I need to embrace it. I need to be like Madness. I need to have that sort of, yeah, we had some fun back in the day, yeah, but we're still doing it.
Yeah, and you need to be a bit like Marty as well. Just take a moment of solace in your music room, have a look at some old stuff, and allow yourself to feel nice about it.
Oh, we're so comfortable, aren't we? Where's the revolution?
No, that's long gone.
OK. And that is the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to Sean Rowley. What are you up to now, professionally-wise?
Professionally-wise, yep. For anyone who's listening into this, you might well enjoy the fact that we're back doing Guilty Pleasures at Coco.
In London's Camden.
But we're now, this is proper heritage shit, this is. The proper joy of it is we've tagged it as the Guilty Pleasures Daytime Disco. It's finished by 9 o'clock at night. It's 3 till 9. You're home in bed by 10 o'clock. It is a dream.
Wow.
It's absolutely, and we did the first one about a month or so ago, and we've got the next one lined up for May the 11th. And we were reflecting on Billy Joel's My Life. We actually wheeled that one out back at Coco a few weeks. There was a brilliant moment where it was a sold out gig, so there's 1,500 people in Coco, and I got to, as I was queuing up and we were about to get, thinking the party was about to start, and I just reflected on the fact that, you know, there's obviously been some amazing music performed at Coco over the years, but when was the last time you heard the fucking Nolans?
No.
And I played the Nolans, and the place went apeshit.
I'm in the mood for dancing.
I'm in the mood, yeah. Of course. It just went, you were just squeals of delight.
It's flawless. You know, that same writing team that wrote most of the Dooley's best songs as well. Fact fans.
They'll have that every time.
We need to say a very late but necessary thank you to the wonderful Mike Batt, yes, who created the theme tune to this very podcast. I can scarcely believe the words coming out of my mouth.
It's amazing, isn't it? I sometimes think the theme tune's better than the podcast. Don't tell anyone.
It was so fresh last time, we didn't have a moment to give him credit. But credit is absolutely due to the lovely Mike. Thank you so much for listening, keeping us company.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can buy us a coffee. The link is in the show notes. But we very much hope to see you next time.
Bye.